So I know I spent a lot of time in college, reading books with my highlighter out and going through, and then it's time for the test, and I go back and read all the things I highlighted. That's not really that effective. Much better to read a little bit, close the book, and explain to yourself what you just read.
Hello, educators and learners, and welcome to Homeroom with Sal, brought to you by Khan Academy. We're an educational technology nonprofit dedicated to bringing a world-class education to anyone, anywhere, and Sal is our founder. I am not Sal Khan. I'm Ken Jones, and I'm on the analytics team here at Khan, and I'm here to introduce today's show. Now, since school closures began earlier this year, Sal's been hosting a chat show on YouTube and Facebook Live called Homeroom with Sal. He answers questions from our community and interviews notable folks from the world of education, technology, finance, entertainment, and more. We decided to take some of our favorite conversations from that web show and make them into a podcast. This week, we're featuring Sal's conversation with Kristen DeCerbo, Chief Learning Officer at Khan Academy. Kristen joined us on Homeroom to talk about learning science. Did you know the way you are studying is probably not very effective? Kristen shares practical tips for studying and getting motivated to learn. Let's drop in on that conversation as Sal asks Kristen a fundamental question. What is learning science?
So let's just start off with a basic question, Kristen. What is learning science?
So if you think about the two words there, fundamentally, it's about trying to use scientific processes, like the scientific method, to study how we learn. So what can we find out about teaching and learning by doing research? It's actually kind of a new phrase, a new domain that we talk about, because it's not just about educational psychology or cognitive psychology, but it also brings in computer science and a little anthropology and thinking about classrooms as a whole, and also the technology that we bring in. So it's a lot of kind of bringing things together to think about how we can improve both educational technology, but generally our teaching and learning and what we know about it by studying it in a little more detail and depth.
And what are, as a learning scientist, and you've done your PhD, and what are some things, high level, before we even get into some of the questions or, thinking about what we're trying to do here at Khan Academy, but what are some of the big ahas that you've had, at least in your learning science career?
I think there's a few. So one is, let's talk about studying a little bit, that lots of people study the wrong way, ways that aren't really helpful. So I know I spent a lot of time in college, reading books with my highlighter out and going through, and then it's time for the test, and I go back and read all the things I highlighted. That's not really that effective. Much better to read a little bit, close the book, and explain to yourself what you just read and say, oh, that relates to this other thing that I know about and how that fits. And then open the book back up. And then once you're done, close the book again and quiz yourself. Because in fact, what you need to do on a test is remember information, to bring information from your memory back in so that you can apply it. And when you quiz yourself, that's what you're doing. If you're just reading and highlighting, that's actually not helping you do the actual thing you need to do on the test. So lots of those things about just thinking about providing yourself explanations of what you've just read and practicing retrieving information from your memory are much better for studying than thinking about just watching things over and over again. I know one thing that you do. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was gonna say, one thing that you do in your videos a lot is you'll say, pause the video and try to solve this. And I don't know how many people actually do this, but they should, because actually that's them trying to actively do something with what you've been explaining. And that's gonna help them remember it more.
No, I mean, that's really interesting. In a lot of ways you've validated. I thought I was a little bit of a weird studier when I was in college and in high school, because I would get frustrated because I could see friends that could kind of just power through a chapter in a dense textbook. And you're exactly right. They had the highlighter. I'm like, oh, I wish I could be that. Because I would read three or four paragraphs, and then I would kind of sit and ponder it for a little bit. And then I would go back into it. But in some ways, you've said that's, I guess,
you're doing the right thing.
I was doing the right thing. Learning science backs me up The I mean, depends what I was pondering. I sometimes probably don't ponder the right things. But actually, there's a bunch of questions here from YouTube. Suresh Jai says, what is Khan Academy's goal and what are the best strategy for learning at night? I could take part of that, but maybe you could start with the what's the best. It's related to what we're talking about. Is there anything specific about night that we should be thinking about?
The biggest things aren't really the time of day, but how much cognitive effort you have to put into something. And so if you have to study at night, you have to study at night. But the things you should do are think about how can you clear out other distractions, make sure it's quiet so you have the most cognitive energy that you have available to focusing on the thing you need to focus on. And so, you know, at the end of the day, if it's been a long day and you're kind of running on fumes, you might think about how to get a little more of that. And even if it's a 15-minute nap before you start, that can be a good thing to think about. You know, how do you get that focus back that you need?
Yeah, no, you know, that's very close to what I would say. And, you know, part of the fun of this conversation might be I will say things and then you will tell me whether that is in no way sound advice. Or actually, Sal, there's three studies that say exactly what you're saying. So what I found, especially in college, when you had some things that were a little bit hard, you know, I remember some of those more advanced math courses, there'd be a question and I'd just look at it. I was like, I don't even know how to approach this. I actually learned to delegate to my subconscious. And I know this sounds a little bit weird, but, you know, just as if you are a manager, if you're an executive at a company, if you're a leader, you can't do everything yourself. You have to delegate to your team. And oftentimes you don't want to micromanage your team. That's disempowering. I realized that we're kind of like this consciousness that sits on this massive computing machine or whatever you want to call it, an inferential engine, which is our brains. And I learned that if I look at the problem and I think deeply about it, I do struggle a little bit. I tried to make a little headway in it, but then I go to sleep. It's eerie how I sometimes wake up in the morning and it's like a delivery of like, no, this is the answer, Sal. I was like, oh, thank you, subconscious. I will go write that down and take credit for it, even though it was, it actually happened recently on a much more, I was like, who's the lead singer of the Eagles? And I went to bed I was like, who's the lead singer? And then I woke up in the morning and I was like, Don Henley. so the brain definitely.
You'll hear lots of people talk about also, like, say, I do my best thinking when I'm walking the dog, or when I'm in the shower. Right. And it's because you're kind of, again, not putting all of your focus on it, but letting it be kind of working in the background there. And there's lots of folks that have that same experience in different ways, whether it's sleeping or just taking a break and thinking about something else for a little while, that'll help you actually then be stronger at the thing you were targeting to do.
Right, right. I think so many times you just feel like you need to power through things, not sleep, right. Take, you know, drink caffeine, and maybe on the margin, but not really long term. Is that a good solution?
Not really. Is that a good solution? And that kind of ties into the other thing that is, if there's one, you know, one of the big findings that's just replicated over and over and over again is try to space out your studying. Trying to cram it all in that night before. Like you said, you might do okay on the test the next day, but if you've got to then do it on the midterm or the final, it's not going to be there anymore. Whereas if you space it out, use the same amount of time. You know, if you're studying for 2 hours a night, if instead you do 20 minutes over time each night for 6 nights, you're going to remember it better than if you just cram those 2 hours in the night before. So that does take some planning. It does mean you've got to be a little bit more planful in your life about where you start putting things in. But we do find that learners who learn more are able to retain it for a longer period of time, do that more spaced practice, we call it.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's consistent. You know, you building that habit, you know, 20 minutes a day, whatever. And to the other part of that question about what's purpose of Khan Academy, for those who don't know, we're not for profit, mission-free, world-class education for anyone, anywhere. And it really is to help all of you whether you're working independently, but ideally working in conjunction with a teacher, to have access to material that is engaging, that you can learn at your own time and pace, that teachers can understand what your needs are better, and you can fill in any gaps and really accelerate your learning. So that's the elevator pitch of Khan Academy for those to that question. So this is a question from Facebook. Robin Schwartz asks, how can we help people enjoy studying, perhaps the same way people enjoy training for a marathon? Thanks from Robin the Math Lady.
Ooh, the Math Lady. I'd like to know more about what she does. But but so there's a number of things that you can think about that make things enjoyable or interesting or motivating. So first, in terms of motivation, we find that there's a couple things that make people find motivating. One, if you have some expectation that you're going to be successful, you're going to be more likely to do something. So that idea is that, you know, if I know if I spend 3 hours on this, I'm still going to fail, that's not going to motivate me to try to do this at all. And so that kind of thinking about what that is. And so this ties in a lot to what you hear about the research on growth versus fixed mindset. And I know you've had Angela Duckworth on talking about grit, which is kind of a longer term piece of this. But on the shorter term, if you think about just understanding that with practice, you can get better at all kinds of things, including math, including science. So that expectation of success, and think about how you frame, how you talk to yourself about whether you're likely to be successful or not. So that's one piece of it, thinking, you know what, I am likely to experience success if I put some hard work into this. And then the second piece is adding value to it. Is this something that's valuable to you? And so things can be valuable in a lot of ways. I know just from talking to you, you are a very curious person, and I think you find value just in learning new things. But other people, I think, sometimes find that it needs to be related to their life. So they want to see how it's going to be related to a hobby or a job that they might need. Or they want to think about how is this going to be related to thinking about another course you might be interested in taking, that you need this to be able to be successful in that course. So thinking about what is the value of this and what can it help you do and provide by learning this knowledge and skills? That's a second piece. But then Robin suggests thinking about like training for a marathon. And a lot of exercise training these days is actually much more about you've got your Fitbit, you've got your graphs, you're tracking your progress, you're thinking about how you're doing and how all of those kind of fit together. And with those pieces, we can also think about, are there ways that we can use those kind of motivators to help make studying more enjoyable? And so at Khan, there are things like energy points that you get by watching videos. You get them by increasing your mastery on skills. You can think about charting your own progress on those skills that you've mastered and thinking about how that then builds into what you know. So you can tie in that system to also the value that you see. So if you think those kinds of things are motivating for you to be able to kind of see your progress and work through it, those kind of things are available too. Think about how you track your progress on learning over time, and things like Khan Academy can help you do that.
That's super useful. And just to throw in my own two cents that are not as backed up by research, but just personal experience, which is, I've said this before, you know, you could view like, oh, I've got to slog through this chapter of the book and memorize some stuff. Or you could tell yourself, we live in this mystery called the universe. Like someone, probably many hundreds of people's life work went into the culmination of knowledge, not the culmination, it's a long journey, but the knowledge that I can now read in a textbook or get on Khan Academy or some other resource. This is powerful. You know, Newton would have done anything to be able to read this chapter, and I get to read it now. So that's one. And it does tell you about how the universe works. No matter, you know, we all have our subjects that we connect with, and then our subjects were like, oh, I guess this is a requirement, I got it. But if you have the opposite mindset, if you say, no, every subject has something that is deep inside of it. You know, I think about when you look at these movies like, or these books like Harry Potter, right? Like we all imagine going on these adventures where we encounter some book and it is cryptic and it is hard to, but there are spells in that book. And if you can get through the cryptic nature of it, you're going to understand something about the universe and be able to manipulate the universe in very powerful ways. And I think you could do the same things in your study. You're learning an organic chemistry mechanism. You're like, oh, I got to memorize the aldol reaction. It's like, no, the aldol reaction has wisdom in it. And if you really understand it, it's going to unlock other things. And you're even going to be able to take it into other parts of your life. But anyway, I think the more you always imagine yourself that you're in some form of an epic adventure, which in theory we are in this kind of who knows what, things become more interesting.
That's pretty cool. And I actually have done in my past a bunch of research on games and learning. And one of the key things, you know, people all the time when they think about games, think about, oh, we're going to earn points and all that. One of the things that actually is really attractive to people about playing games is the quest, the going and the searching and the, you know, seeing where the quest takes you and leads you. And that's kind of what you're talking about, too, of the adventure of getting there.
Exactly. Exactly. And when whoever it is, you know, Hermione encounters some old spell book, she's like, oh, I got to read this. Hermione's got the example of the person who does like to study. But
yes. Anyway,
I mean, there's a bunch of questions coming in. I mean, but I'll ask a general question relative to Khan Academy. You know, Christian, we've obviously talked a lot about this, but where do you think Khan Academy, where do you think it fits in the learning process? And, you know, related to that, on YouTube, Nikhil Govender asks, I mean, it says hi, Sal, but really hi, both of us. You know, why do you believe in the mastery approach to learning? So, yeah, I mean, kind of paint a picture. Where does Khan Academy fit in? What does it do well? Where does the in-person classroom mean a lot? Like, what are your thoughts there? And what does research tell us?
One of the reasons I was excited to join Khan Academy was actually because of the ways that it can serve as a supplement to everything else that goes on in the classroom. And so when we think about what that means as a supplement, we want to do a couple of different things. So one thing that happens with a curriculum or with a teacher teaching a classroom is sometimes the explanation just doesn't quite make sense. You don't quite get it. But having someone else explain it in a slightly different way, it gives you that aha moment of, oh yeah, now I get it. So that's one thing, certainly with the videos that happen a lot and is one place to think about just getting an alternative explanation of what's going on. And then the second piece that we know is so important for learning is to be able to practice with feedback. And very often there's maybe a problem set in the back of the book with the, you know, the odd number answers that just have the answer. So there's this whole problem when you turn to the, you're like, I don't know how to do this. You turn to the back of the book and it says 62. You're like, I don't know what to make of that. And so Khan Academy provides both the ability to have additional practice, but also to have some supports in doing it. So having some hints to get you unstuck, and then once you get to an answer, giving you feedback about whether that was right and why or why not it was right. So that's really important to the learning process and where things are. The bigger question is then that all of that fits into this idea of mastery learning, which I know you've explained on various times, but for folks that aren't familiar, is the idea that you work on mastering or getting up to proficiency on a given piece of knowledge or skill before you keep going on to the next one. In most of our traditional education, you just move forward to the next skill and next skill, whether you've mastered the last one or not. And we end up with kind of these holes in learning. And so what we can do with mastery learning is say, we're going to focus, instead of making sure you go all everyone in lockstep, is say, we're going to make sure you master this skill, and then we'll go on to the next skill and the next skill. And the research behind that is that that leads to large impacts on learning. So this is actually something that, particularly in the 70s and the 80s, was studied extensively, like hundreds of studies. And so then there's been these studies that bring and try to summarize all of those studies. And they consistently find that effect of mastering something, testing, say, do I know this? If I don't, I go back and learn it more and deeper, and then test again. And then when I'm ready to go on, that sequence is really powerful and leads to large impacts on learning outcomes.
And what's your sense, given that there is this, you know, fairly large body of research? I think there's few things with that much data backing it up. Why hasn't, I mean, as you mentioned, a lot of these studies were in the 70s or 80s, and, you know, we've even talked 100 years ago in Winnetka, Illinois, they were doing some essentially mastery learning. Why isn't, in your sense, it kind of the mainstream way of learning today?
Well, our systems aren't set up to do this. So if you think about a classroom, even with 30 kids, much less a school with hundreds of kids, how do you have everyone go at their own pace? Like, it's not scalable. It's not how we can then educate a whole bunch of learners. So that's the beauty of a supplement like Khan Academy, is we can think about how to create a hybrid approach where students are keeping up at grade level. And that's important, we know, for students to be able to make progress and get to eventually where they need to be. But at the same time, they can be filling their gaps in between so that they are not having those big holes in the Swiss cheese that they don't know how to, that inhibit them from then learning the new content. So I think in order to be able to work in the system we have with schools, with learners, we need to think about how that hybrid approach comes together.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, there's a question here from Facebook, Mona Lisa Carr, and this is, I think, a question a lot of people are asking right now. How can the engagement of students be done now that the online classes are here to stay and are the new norm? How can we make their learning more effective? So yeah, I mean, this is a big question right now.
It sure is. I think first I would say, do not just try to replicate everything we did in the in-school classroom in a digital environment. Instead, think about, all right, what are our main goals and how can we use the digital environment in maybe new ways to help us get there? So if you think about what things the digital world lets us do, it lets us potentially set up problems and scenarios that are more in-depth. And we can think about, for instance, simulations that allow us to simulate things that maybe we can't even see in the real world, or let us try things that would be really dangerous in the real world. And so thinking about how we can take advantage of what the digital world lets us do to do kind of some fun and interesting things that keep students engaged and motivated, I think is the approach we need to take, instead of saying, how can we just, you know, move what we've done before and put it in a new place.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I'll just add, you know, I think even in in-person classrooms, the more interactive it is, the better. And, you know, people have heard me go off about, you know, 300-person lecture halls, just a lecture, don't really make a lot of sense. But that's that much more important in a digital environment, because obviously if someone just lectures to someone for 60 minutes in a digital environment, that might as well be a video. And frankly, that should have been chunked up into, you know, 5-6 minute long videos. So when you're on the Zoom or Google Meet, the more interactive it can be, where you're able to pull students out. And maybe there is, to your point, you know, you could maybe do shorter sessions, but we'll do it with smaller groups of students. Let them, you know, Khan Academy is valuable for the asynchronous, where kids can learn at their own time and pace, do the mastery learning, teachers can monitor. And that way, when they go synchronous on Zoom or whatever else, or in the classroom, ideally, they can go deeper. And some kids can continue to work at their own time and pace, while some kids get a much more highly focused intervention at a ratio that is normally hard to do, to your point. Normally you're getting a 30-to-1, one pace fits all, and some kids are lost, some kids are bored, and no one really feels that personal attention. But obviously in a class of 30, 15 could work on something else while 15 get a deep dive on something they need.
Yeah, and what you've talked about, that difference between active and passive, is another one of those big fundamental things in learning science. So there's actually something that's called the ICAP framework, I-C-A-P. And as you go through it, you can think about the impact on learning. So the P is passive. That's like just sitting there watching a video, doing nothing. So that's going to have the least amount of impact on learning. And then from there, you can think about active. So I'm actually, you know, answering questions and doing something. Then the C stands for constructing. And that just means I'm actually creating something. And so if I'm having to do all of the creation and thinking about where that is, that's going to be even more impactful on learning. And finally, the I is interactive. And that's interacting with other people about the content. And that's the most powerful thing you can do. So if we think about the availability of video conferencing, many of them have the capability of doing small groups. So how can, instead of thinking the video conferencing is a way for me to redo my lecture to all of you, how can I break you into small groups and have you talk about the content instead of thinking about it as a one-way transmission of what we're doing? So as you think about what do we know about learning And how can we then help use the digital tools to help us take advantage of those pieces? I think that's going to give the strongest results in this new world we're in.
Yeah, or any world we're in, frankly. But it's that much more important. That much more important to your point. These conversations always go faster. But luckily, Kristen, we're part of the same team, so we'll have you on many times. Maybe just finish. You know, what are your people have heard me talk about my hopes and dreams for Khan Academy. You know, even at a high level as an institution, but also sometimes as an experience. You know, what are your hopes for Khan Academy, at least, and especially from a learning science point of view, but really on any dimension?
Yeah, no, I think it definitely most of them are related to the learning science point of view. Although the overall vision of a, you know, world-class free education for anyone, anywhere is pretty amazing. But I think the piece that then I can contribute to that is thinking about how do we make the most of this idea of being a key supplemental resource? How can we best take advantage of mastery learning and help teachers do that in the classroom in ways that flow easily for them and that are become just then another part of how they teach? And then as that piece, as we become, think about how we can be integrated into classrooms and help support teachers in being able to scale that idea of mastery learning, then the next piece becomes, how can we also think about these ideas of being more active and encouraging activity? How do we provide resources to help teachers do that, both with Khan Academy, and if Khan Academy is helping the teachers do more of the practice and the feedback, how can teachers then have more time to do more of the potentially constructive and interactive things that they might be able to do? So I see us becoming a trusted supplement that helps teachers overall teach in the ways that they want to teach, and help learners be able to get those better learning outcomes that they're going to get to.
Yeah, no, we're excited. I'm excited to do it with you, hopefully, and then the whole team here at Khan Academy. Thanks so much for joining, Kristen.
Thank you, Sal. It's a pleasure to be here.
If you want to hear more conversations with Sal, subscribe to this podcast and tell a friend. If you want to support the work we do here at Khan Academy, visit khanacademy.org/donate. We're a nonprofit, and we appreciate your financial support in making sure that our materials can reach as many learners as possible, especially during this moment of COVID lockdowns. That's khanacademy.org/donate. And that's our podcast, folks. Your host is Sal Khan. This show is produced by my wonderful Khan Academy coworkers, Kevin Dangor, Stephanie Yamkovenko, Dan Tu, Irene Wang, Jenna Herzog, Anthony Nelson, Felipe Escamilla, Irene Chen, David Reinstrom, and me, Ken Jones. Our intro theme is Time Flux by Revolution Void, and our outro theme is Onward by Poddington Bear. That's our show for this week. Until next time, as always, keep learning.